Well, it's one thing to have five countries in BRICS, and then they added five more as 10. And that's big and that's significant. Add another potentially 50 more, and you have enough mass adoption, mass amount of human population. You control the world's commodities. You control many of the shipping lanes. You control the energy production. All of this stuff, little by little by little, and bang, we're not going to take dollars for oil anymore. Why? Because you signed an executive order to go green and you weaponize the dollar against our BRICS brothers and sisters, Russia and Iran.
Andy Schechtman, how you doing?
I am doing good, Andy. Nice to see you, brother. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, you're very welcome. So let's get to it. I really appreciated and am interested in your thoughts on the BRICS and their view, if you would, on the dollar and why they're doing the things that they're doing. If you would, let's go back about 8 months ago, last June, and the BRICS, I thought, well, I didn't know if it was going to happen or not, but I was a little suspicious that they would come out and say, hey, we're dumping, well, I don't say dumping dollars, but we want to get rid of the dollar and have a new currency right now. That wouldn't have served them well. But what is interesting is what happened during that meeting. And what I mean, during that meeting, there was a talk and they're beginning to add members or started to add members more aggressively. And then you couple that, I guess you got to follow the dots, and you couple that with a large purchases of central bank gold buying. So something's up. And if you would, give me your thoughts going back 7 months and get us up to speed of where we're at now with all of that.
Well, yeah. So if you go back even further, you have the Russian finance minister, Sergei Lavrov, who was saying, we're going to issue a common currency that will be pegged to a basket of commodities. Now, if you go back even further to 2019, what you see is something that should have garnered massive mainstream attention, but much to the same, you know, tune that I've talked about forever, that our Western media doesn't talk about anything relevant or important these days. It was ignored, and that was that the Bank of International Settlements, Andy, which is the most powerful bank on the planet, it is the central bank or central bank, very quiet. They reclassify gold as the world's only other tier one reserve asset. Right. Now, when you realize that at the end of World War II, the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury bond were the only, since then, really, the only tier one asset on the planet, which is a riskless asset. In essence, if I lend you $1 million, write you a check, and you say, I'm going to give you a briefcase filled with $1 million in cash to hold, well, that's tier one to me. That's riskless. I don't care if I never see you again. I got collateral. Well, in essence, that's what tier one is. And when you realize that the tier one assets have only been U.S. dollars and treasuries, and then out of nowhere, 70 plus years later, they say, oh, by the way, gold is now tier one. When you realize that all the central banks, in particular, the BRICS central banks, like China, who's bought for 14 straight months in a row, and of course, India and Saudi Arabia and Russia, all these countries that are massively accumulating and producing gold, its tier one revision has much greater significance. But when we go back to the meeting, you know, I've been saying a lot of the things that people were talking about coming up to that meeting for years. And the three in particular that got the most attention, or the two, would be that number one, they will issue a common settlement currency backed by commodities, most likely gold. And secondly, that the Eurasian Economic Union and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization would join the BRICS. Now, I've been saying that in hundreds of videos that I've done for years. James Rickards, who has a little bit of a bigger following, perhaps, because, you know, he's partnered with Agora and they have a mailing list of 1 million plus people. And he publicly said this. Now, I had the good fortune of sitting down with Jim in July, a month before the August meeting in Johannesburg. And I asked him these questions. We had a couple drinks and I asked him and I said, you know, I agree with everything you're saying. I've been saying this for a long time too. Now, what I wanted to say to him is if I were you, I wouldn't publicly say that this is going to happen next month in August in the first BRICS meeting, because I think when you do that, and if it doesn't happen, you diminish credibility. You go back and look at the things I've been saying in the nearly 500 videos I've done on this topic since 2019, 2020. I said this, and the reason I said this, look, you got the Chinese Belt Road and Rail Initiative. It's the largest infrastructure project in human history, and it's 160 plus countries. It's 75% of global population, 50% of global GDP. You got the BRICS, you got the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the Eurasian Economic Union. They are largely the same entities, many of which are in all of them. They are largely driven by the same ideology and the same goals, and it is largely about divesting of Western influence, Western hegemony, and the dollar. And I said they will all join together. You look at a country like Russia, they're in all of them. You know, they're part of the Eurasian Economic Union. They're in the BRICS. They're in the Belt Road. They're in the SCO. And you know, what is the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization? It's the largest regional financial and military organization on the planet. They are not someone to take lightly. And so when you talk about all of these entities, in fact, the president of Belarus, a few months after the August meeting, when it didn't happen, came out and said publicly, we need to hold a summit together to have the Eurasian Economic Union and the Shanghai Cooperation meld with BRICS. Well, this is one of the things James Rickard said. He said it would happen in August. It didn't happen in August. I said the same thing for 2 years. It's going to happen. The BRICS will back their currency with a common, or it will be a common settlement currency to begin with. It doesn't need to be a reserve currency because of everything in terms of settlement, like for energy and all of the BRICS countries that are now OPEC countries, in particular adding Iran and UAE and Saudi Arabia on top of Russia. You're talking the majority of oil production in the world is controlled by the BRICS. So at some point, they are going to peg their currency to something. But if you see in terms of it being a reserve currency or a settlement currency, if all of energy is settled in another currency or in other currencies, over time, the lack of settlement in the dollar will erode tremendously the reserve status. But here, all of a sudden, we see that they just issued their first ever BRICS bonds. Not a tremendous amount, 130, 40 billion. I don't remember the exact amount. The point is that they just issued BRICS bonds only to be purchased by other BRICS currencies. You can't purchase them with U.S. dollars. And they're called like the Maharaja bonds or something to that extent. But these are BRICS bonds. The point of it is that, and I am very fond of the term logarithmic decay, which is kind of like the Niagara Falls, little by little by little by little by little, then bang, all at once. Well, that's what we've seen happening largely for the last few years and especially since August. But if we look at what didn't happen at that meeting, yes, they did not say that we are going to issue at this meeting a common settlement currency. But what they did say is that, well, in the meantime, we're going to task all of our financial ministers to all of these countries to go back to the drawing board and come back to us at the meeting here in Russia in 2024, in October, and present your findings. In the meantime, you're going to trade in local currencies, all of these countries, and you're beginning to see that. We just saw United Arab Emirates do a massive deal, first one ever with, I believe, with China, using the Project M-Bridge, as in money, which is it's a digital platform that allows these countries to trade their own central bank digital currencies amongst one another, sidestepping the SWIFT system. But if you're using your own local currency to buy energy instead of the dollar, which it always was since 1974, when we struck the deal with Saudi Arabia, we protect you and therefore you value oil in dollars globally. That's created a synthetic demand for the dollar for the last 50 years, as every country in the world has had to stockpile them to buy oil. Well, now if all of these countries start trading in local currencies, sidestepping the SWIFT system, which is the tool of the sanctions, you know, you have a system that is little by little by little progressing away from the settlement status of the U.S. dollar, which is a very big deal.
And yeah, although, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, and although the things didn't materialize, look, they said come back in October and present your findings. But in the meantime, there's 200 meetings between now and October in Russia, each one of them related to the BRICS. They're all BRICS meetings before the big one. And we're going to see all sorts of developments happen between now and next October, let alone a month later, you have maybe the most important election in the history of this country. So we will begin to see things become much clearer. But I will tell you that it is my 100% belief that you will see a commodity-backed currency eventually that will, and what is gold? Oh yeah, it's the only other tier one asset on the planet. Who's been buying it all? Oh yeah, the central banks. Who produces more of it? Oh, yeah, that'd be China and Russia and India. They produce more. They accumulate more. They don't export any, and they, you know, they import more. And so these are the countries who understand the significance, not just of gold and silver, where a country like India has imported 400 million ounces of silver in the last 2 years. That's more than twice as much almost as on COMEX market. But they're doing it with all the world's commodities. And in trading to accumulate these commodities, if being bought from countries that are non-Western, many of them are trading in their local currencies. Even our allies, like Macron from France, he just did a massive liquid natural gas deal with the United Arab Emirates and paid in yuan. So when we talk about the erosion of the settlement value of the dollar, the de-dollarization, it is little by little by little by little, then bang, all at once, not until we have mass adoption. But what have we learned since October? Oh, yeah, 35 more countries have formally applied to the BRICS. 35 more with another 20 plus. You're talking, when this is all said and done, if you add the BRICS, the Belt Road Initiative, the countries that comprise it, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the Eurasian Economic Union, you're talking the majority of human population, the majority of global GDP, much stronger military, might two of the three largest nuclear arsenals on the planet. You're talking the majority of the world's commodities. And if you look at the countries, if you were to look at a map of the Middle East, and you put in there Iran, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, all of these, they have the Red Sea covered, they have the Straits of Hormuz covered, all of the shipping lanes, the strategic shipping lanes, and the North-South corridor that Russia just finished building, which connects Iran with India, and all of the, you know, the abilities to sidestep traditional shipping lanes that the U.S. Navy patrols. All of these things, the reason it didn't come out in August is because, like cryptocurrency people, will talk about mass adoption. Well, it's one thing to have five countries in BRICS, and then they added five more as 10. And that's big, and that's significant. Add another potentially 50 more, and you have enough mass adoption, mass amount of human population. You control the world's commodities. You control many of the shipping lanes. You control the energy production, all of this stuff, little by little by little, and bang, we're not going to take dollars for oil anymore. Why? Because you signed an executive order to go green and you weaponize the dollar against our BRICS brothers and sisters, Russia and Iran. And if we're on the wrong side of you, and we, by the way, believe you're hypocritical. I mean, think about what we've done to Iraq. We invaded them 20 years ago. We're still sanctioning 14 of their banks and we've held all of their oil revenue 20 years. After we invaded them, supposedly in a democratic fashion, they asked us for $1 billion last year. Of the $90 billion that they made the year in 2023 selling oil, no, we said, no, we're not going to give it to you. So what did they do? They just formally applied to BRICS. They have kicked, they're saying they're in the process of kicking coalition forces out of the country. They've made trading in dollars illegal. If you own a business and you trade in dollars, you'll go to jail and they'll take your business. And as of January 1st of this year, all green dollar bills, like $20 bills, $100 bills, there are none left in any of the banks in Iraq. They view us as hypocritical, but the weaponizing of the dollar, where, you know, you can do what you want as the U.S. and you can evade a country under false pretenses. You never found those weapons of mass destruction, occupy their country for 20 years, control their oil revenue, do all of these things, sanction their banks for trading with Iranian banks so they could buy a liquid natural gas because they're frying to death in the summer. No, says the U.S. So we say no, but we look at what we've done to Russia, and whether or not you agree with that, it should not be our prerogative to say who can and who can't use the dollar. So by weaponizing the dollar, we've made the entire Southern Hemisphere say, no, I don't trust these guys, especially now that the Speaker of the House and the Biden administration is talking about not just sanctioning and freezing and freezing interest payments on the bonds that they own, like we do with Iran and just gave a bunch back. No, we're going to confiscate
it. Confiscate their assets.
To fight the war in Ukraine. Now, you cross that line and you'll never come back from it.
Right.
So when you realize we've weaponized the dollar and we've signed an executive order to go green, and all of these countries are joining together who represent the majority of human population and the majority of oil production, you can see the handwriting on the wall. You don't have to be an economist or even very astute to see what's coming. Little by little by little by little. The problem is the media in this country doesn't show us what's really happening. You have to watch people like yourself or myself and find alternative sources of truth and media that show us what's happening. And that's the sad part, is that the majority of people that you call friends your whole life will be run over by this because they don't see it coming. And that's the scary thing. But yeah, what happened in August, big deal. What they did is they set the table for mass adoption. And to do it, if you only get one shot and got one bullet in your gun, you better wait till you have the kill shot. Right. And so to speak, you're not going to shoot if you aren't positive you're going to hit the target. And by issuing that currency, that settlement currency, pegged to commodities last August would have been futile. But to do it when you have the majority of human population and all the GDP and all the energy production, the shipping lanes and mass adoption, safety in numbers, yes. And it may not even happen here in October. But like I said, 200 BRICS meetings between now and October, the one big one. So there will be a lot of information that rears itself over the next several months. And better to be aware of it now than before it all at once happens.
Yeah, no, very true. It brings back a couple of questions that I have. The first one, and this is twofold. So there's a question of infrastructure, dollar infrastructure. So dollar is the most liquid currency, right? And our bond market's the most, I guess, yeah. I mean, there's, if you want to park money, that's where you park money. So my question really is, will the BRICS have the infrastructure to handle that, But you made a key point where it's settlement, not reserve. So they
Let's talk about the reserve status for a moment.
Yeah, please.
So part of the petrodollar deal, Andy, was that you value oil in dollars. We protect you for it, that being OPEC and Saudi Arabia. And with the excess reserves, you put them in the U.S. Treasuries. Well, how's that worked out for them recently as the bond market's down roughly 40% or more?
Yeah, not very well.
Right. And so when you look at the amount of bonds that, as an example, China holds, they're down to 16 or 17 year lows. At the same time, the central banks have bought more gold than at any time in history. So let's talk about this for a second. Since 2000, the price of gold has averaged a 7.8% annual increase per year since 2000. 25 years, Neil, 24 years, 7.8% annually. The S&P 500, 7%. And the bond market, about half of that. So, right. Or less. So what I'm getting at is that I believe that these countries who say, well, they're inflating away their currency. Last year, for the first time in 45 years, the 10-year treasury had greater volatility than the gold price. We don't agree with them ideologically or politically. And they signed an executive order to go green. And all of these things that do not mesh with us, this is our one chance. So what they are doing, in my opinion, is slowly selling treasuries, which have interest rate risk, inflation risk, and default risk.
Right.
And then replacing it with gold in their own possession, which is what? Oh, yeah. The only other tier one reserve asset that carries what? No counterparty liability. It is the only, one of the only assets in the world that have simultaneously no counterparty liability, no risk if it's in your own possession. And that's why when you see what's happened over the last couple of years, not only have the banks been wickedly buying it, they have repatriated it from the Bank of England and the New York Fed, starting with the German Bundesbank in 2017. They tried to get it out in 14 and for 3 years in vain before they screamed about it. And then after that happening, within weeks, you had the Bank of Austria, the Dutch National Bank, Turkey, Poland, Hungary, you know, the Czech National Bank. They all repatriated their gold. And if you look at these countries that are buying gold, they're all possessing it. We're seeing the exchanges being bled dry. So what I'm getting at is that from a historical perspective, Andy, a country's debt as an asset has a very small historical footprint. Yes, it has always been the most liquid market in the world. We have $10 trillion worth of treasuries that are coming due this year. How the hell do you pay for that? I got a good idea. Let's borrow more money to pay for the treasuries that are coming due this year. Almost $8 trillion in two-year treasuries that were rolled over. Or they're coming due right now that may get rolled over or may not get rolled over, but they are coming due. And so as rates continue to rise, you have all of this debt that is happening. And, you know, now they're talking about lowering rates, which I don't think they'll do. But how do you pay for all of this debt with lower rates? It becomes less and less attractive. It ain't going to happen. We're not going to lower rates. The point of it is that I think these countries are selling their treasuries and buying gold because it's outperformed the bond market for a quarter of a century. It carries no counterparty liability. And if you do something to piss off the West, they can't sanction you. And they can't freeze your treasuries and then actually keep them because, well, we don't like what you're doing. Forget about what we do around the world. We don't like what you're doing and we're the reserve currency and we say you can't do it. Now, again, I am a patriot, right? I'm the most least likely person to have achieved the success that I have. This country has afforded me tremendous opportunities, but I am not a fan of the administration or the moves that we're making. And ironically, above all of this, the lead economic advisor to the United States government is a fool named Jared Bernstein, whose thesis is to lose the reserve status, that it is a privilege we can no longer afford through the distortions and the anomalies and imbalances it creates. And he's written all sorts of reports about this, been picked up in the New York Times, called Dethrone King Dollar, and the Washington Post. And this is a guy who wants to lose the reserve status. So how do you do that? Well, you weaponize the dollar. And then you sign an executive order to go green, which is the linchpin of the dollar hegemony. So you can't make it up. It's so stupid. Either that or it's too stupid to be stupid. But I will tell you that I do believe that a lot of these countries will look to gold as a better substitute to park your reserves than the bond market is, that is losing credibility. And so people say, well, you know, who's going to trust, you know, that we have the most liquid and trustworthy bond market on the planet. But do people really trust this country the way they used to? So that's one of the things I'd like people to think about. The Justice Department, the rule of law, is there two tiers to it? You know, our open borders, our lawlessness in the cities, our wokeness, our lack of respect for authority, where cops get beat up in the afternoon in New York City. I mean, these kinds of things that are going all around are not lost on the rest of the world. And if it were just the mismanagement of the dollar, fine, but look at what's happened to this country. We are not the same country that you and I grew up in. You know, kids don't even say Pledge of Allegiance anymore. And what is the last line of Pledge of Allegiance? For liberty and justice for all, where people walk from Central America or float on inner tubes tied together with string from Cuba to find liberty, to leave an authoritarian regime, and justice. And is justice equal now? Has Biden been treated equally to Trump, or vice versa? I mean, the point of it is all of this stuff is culminating at the same time. And so when we talk about the trustworthiness of a bond market that has been eviscerated and the currency that is being inflated and a government that is allowing this country to lose its bearings, it's a problem. And I think it only feeds into the de-dollarization, because little boys and girls around the world for years have listened to you know, rock and roll the United States and watch TV shows and movies and really desired vehemently to come and be part of this freedom and this wonderful life that we have here in this country. And I think a lot of the people around the world look at this country and say, what the hell's happened to the United States? And I think it makes it much easier to de-dollarize and seek alternatives to what recency bias and normalcy bias tells us is the only place to be. And I think these countries are deciding, well, maybe there are other places after all.
Right. And it really poses the question that I have for you then is, are we this stupid, number one? And you look for everything from, like, I don't know, from being an exporter, a net exporter of energy, of oil, to now having to import. But everything, or is this intentional? And if it's intentional, why?
I believe it is intentional. And the reason why is, if you look at the 2022 balance sheet, the 23 hasn't come out yet. It shows, it would show now a $34 trillion debt and about $150 trillion in unfunded liabilities, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and government military pensions. What is the biggest asset of the United States? First of all, we have $5 trillion in assets, backing $155 to $200 trillion in liabilities. We're broke. We're insolvent. We're at 128% debt to GDP. There's never been a country that's crossed the 130 threshold and come back. You either hyperinflate or default outright. And what is our biggest asset? 40% of the United States government's assets is student debt. Google it, it'll pop right up just like that. So the debt of our children is the biggest asset of the home of the brave and the land of the free. And so why would it be intentional? Well, and, you know, why would you want to do this? Well, because we're past the point of return. And my mentor for many years was a man, God rest his soul, named Richard Russell, who was brilliant. Yes, brilliant. brilliant man. Dow Theory Letters. I read him every day. I literally felt like I lost a dog or a family member when he passed away. And I say that with respect. I don't mean like I lost a dog to denigrate his life. I meant it was like a friend every day. And he used to say the Fed has two choices, inflate or die. That was back then, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I say, how about a third option? Find a villain. So let's go back to what I was saying. The lead economic advisor of the Biden administration wants to lose the reserve status, the privilege we can no longer afford. So what do? We weaponize the dollar, and then we sign an executive order to go green. And of course, we kill the Keystone Pipeline and all of these things. And we tell everyone we're going green and this is our agenda. And then we destabilize the country on the inside with the borders and the elections and the justice system and the lawlessness and the inner city problems and all of this shit that is destabilizing this country that bothers me more than anything as a patriot. And when you incentivize, which is the linchpin of the dollar hegemony, countries like Saudi Arabia to join BRICS, not just join BRICS, they join the Belt Road along with every other OPEC country on Belt Road. They join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the largest regional financial and military organization in the world. They join the BRICS New Development Bank. They tell everyone in Davos, we're open to taking new currencies. United Arab Emirates, who just joined BRICS alongside of Saudi Arabia, just told the world they're not taking oil for dollars for oil anymore. Iran just said it. Russia just said it. When we incentivize this behavior by everyone who makes their living selling oil, or that's how they're defined. That's who they are. That's what their life is. And we say, we're going a different direction. When you see the crown prince of Saudi Arabia say, China was our biggest trading partner this year and for the next 50 years in oil. What does that mean? Well, it was 50 years ago. We signed the petrol agreement with Saudi Arabia. We protect you. And by extension, you will then value oil through OPEC globally in dollars. And that's how it's worked. Well, what did China do? Or Saudi Arabia do the day we left Afghanistan? They signed a military agreement, protection agreement with Russia. Little by little, these things are happening. So we incentivize these countries to move away from the dollar through weaponization, and we're not united or ideologically united anymore with oil and energy. We're going the other way. And then you mismanage the bond market. You incentivize everyone to take copious amounts of debt and buy treasuries. That's part of the petro deal at the lowest interest rates in history. Then bang, you spike interest rates up 11 times in a year and decimate the bond holdings. You signal to the world that you're choosing inflation over austerity, that you're not going to normalize your balance sheet. You're not going to do the things necessary to get rid of inflation, even though the CPI says, well, it's coming down. Well, it's a lie. They don't tell us they exclude food, energy, and housing. They keep changing it. Real inflation, if you go to shadowstats.com with John Williams, it's about 8 or 9 or 10%. Or the unemployment numbers, which they keep touting as being so great, it's actually, they revised 440,000 jobs for 2023, or 40% of the jobs that they said they created. We didn't. We're being lied to. But the point I'm getting at is simply this. Why? Well, we're broke. We're insolvent. We are nearly 130% debt to GDP. We have nothing in the way of assets. Our largest is student debt. And a trillion seconds ago, by the way, was 31,688 years ago. So when you talk about how big this is not small. This is huge. We added $2 trillion in debt from 23 to 24 in 1 year. It took over 230 years to do that the first time. We did it in 1 year. And so now we're getting to that hockey stick point. So getting back to your question, what does Jared Bernstein want? Lose the reserve status. How about the number two in charge at the U.S. government, Lael Brainard? She'll probably be the Treasury, the head of the Fed next. She worked at the Treasury. She then worked at the Fed underneath Powell. And then she left and then has been advising Biden. She's a modern monetary theorist. She just ran point for Fed Now, which just came out a few months ago, which is Venmo and Zelle on steroids backed by the Federal Reserve. It will take the place of checks and wires within a year. She worked with MIT in the development of the new central bank digital currency that Biden fast-tracked by executive order. She wants to see the banks collapse. She wants a handful of banks and a modern monetary theorist, which means we're going to issue a new central bank digital currency. Let's put this all together now. So why and how? All right. If we really wanted to retain the world reserve status, we would certainly pull our act together here in the United States and make the world think that we are the beacon of liberty and justice and freedom and respect and everything, number one. Number two, we would never weaponize the dollar as the world reserve currency. When we go in and do things to Iraq, that's okay, even though we didn't find those weapons. But no, you cannot do this, and you cannot do this, and you cannot do this. You're out of the SWIFT. Okay, we now incentivize everyone to find a back door. And then, hey, guys, thanks for the memories. You know, the synthetic demand that's been created for 50 years, but everyone had to buy dollars to stockpile, dollars to buy oil. And we're going a different direction. We signed an executive order to go green. We've incentivized the world to do this. How much of this is talked about in the mainstream media? That much, right? So here's how it all comes together, right? First, you look at the pandemic. What happened during the pandemic? You had more money thrown into the system in 4 years than in the history of the country preceding it. It created massive distortions in assets, stocks, bonds, real estate. Everything went parabolic, right? Because money and interest rates were cheap and money was everywhere. And that created distortions and misallocations. So then you jack up interest rates and you see what happens, but only far enough so the whole system doesn't break. And they don't then get dragged out of the, you know, out of their offices like Marie Antoinette did, they being Powell and Janet Yellen and whoever created this mess, right? Okay. So how about option number three? Option one was inflate. That's always been the one politicians have chosen. Option number two, default. We don't want to do that. Well, how about find a villain? And that villain is Xi Jinping and Putin and OPEC. How could they do this to us? How could they no longer take the dollar for the world reserve currency? Now think about this. When every country like this, it's one thing for UAE, the seventh largest producer of oil in the world, and the OPEC member just got into BRICS to say it. It's another thing for Iran to say it or Russia to say it. How about Saudi Arabia and the rest of OPEC says, listen, you guys, all of our brothers and sisters are on the OPEC brothers and sisters are on the Belt Road. You know, we've joined BRICS. Many of the OPEC countries are either in BRICS or have formally applied to it. You signed an executive order to go green, and we really thank you for the last 50 years of protection, but we've signed protection agreements with Russia and now being in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is the largest regional military organization in the world, and the BRICS in general, two of the three largest nuclear arsenals, we're okay. So we wish you luck. And we're not taking dollars for oil anymore. And every country on the planet dumps dollars. Why would they hold them? It's the last scene of Trading Places when one Duke brother says to the other, sell Mortimer, sell, as he's watching his whole life savings disappear. If everyone is holding dollars who no longer needs to hold them to buy oil, how fast will they get dumped? And when those dollars get dumped, you see a tidal wave, a tsunami of dollars coming across the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean at the same time, smashing into the United States, creating hyperinflation. And what is the byproduct of hyperinflation? Not directed by the Federal Reserve, but by the market. You cannot have 30% inflation and 5% interest rates. The market says, no, if we're going to ever do business with you at all, we need interest rates way up here to compensate for the inflation, right? So you have 30% inflation and 30% interest rates. What happens to stocks, bonds, real estate, the banking sector, and the dollar? It's the boom, 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 boom. They all implode. And now everyone is down to the same level. But have no fear. Lael Brainard is here with her central bank digital currency. And all you need to do, Andy, I know your 401k was just blown up. I know your bank account and the bank that you bank at is gone. They literally vaporized when rates went way up there, completely insolvent. I know that every bank in your hometown, with the exception of JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America and, you know, a couple others, well, they're all gone too. But listen, have no fear. Just sign on the dotted line and take the CBDC that we've been working on with MIT for a while now, and we'll make you whole. Because isn't that what modern monetary theory is? And the interesting thing about it, we talked earlier about the bonds and who's selling them and buying gold instead. Who's been buying all the bonds over the last year or two? Oh yeah, that'd be the American public chasing yield and the hedge funds as yield had gone up. So Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government military pensions are $150 trillion unfunded off balance sheet. That's all owed to who? American public. The majority of the debt, including the majority of the issuance of the bonds recently, the short term, who is it owed to? Oh yeah, that's the American public. Way easier to find a villain. Those sons of bitches did it to us and point to them. But let's just all join together, take the CBDC, we'll make you whole, we'll build our country back from the inside. It's the great reset that Klaus Schwab talks about. And instead of falling on the sword and taking the blame for the mismanagement of the currency and the mismanagement of our geopolitical affairs and all of the things that we have done, you now have the ability to start over and point to a villain. Now, could it happen? I don't know. Everything I just told you up until the could it happen is fact. And, you know, is it too stupid to be stupid, or did they do this specifically to incentivize all of these countries to dump the dollar? Isn't that, that's what Jared Bernstein wants. Lil Brainard wants to get rid of all the banks and go CBDC. Well, how do you do that? People aren't going to take that unless they have no choice. How do you have no choice? The world dumps dollars, and everything in this country that makes people feel wealthy is inversely correlated to a spike in interest rates. Not a pussyfoot spike by Powell raising rates to 5%, but a real spike where the market says, no, 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 no. Your inflation is way higher. Every country just dumped dollars. There's 50 times more dollars around the world than there is here. And now they're all sitting on your shores and you have hyperinflation. So the only way anyone will hold dollars if interest rates are high enough to compensate for it, that'll be hard enough as it is. But the point of it is that spike in rates blows up stocks, bonds, real estate, the banking system, and the dollar all at once. So could it happen? Sure. Why not? And look at the stupid things that we have done inside this country and outside this country to make it all become a real plausible outcome. I guess only time will tell, but these are the things that people have no idea are coming bearing down at them, or the possibility of it. And this has been my main thrust now for the better part of 3.5 years, talking about this exact subject, which I'm glad that you asked questions on, because more people need to know about it.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you for that. Listen, I know you got to leave, but before you leave, I have to ask you about silver, since you and Dave Morgan are the silver guys. Real quick. So Shanghai now has a silver exchange. I've been thinking about this for a while. I don't know what their premiums are on silver, but I'm just going to make an assumption that you can get a better price selling it on Shanghai than you can here on the COMEX.
Right now, last I looked, the LBMA, which is London Bullion Metal Association, which is basically the same thing as COMEX in terms of their price, was at 22.45. This was a few days ago, and Shanghai was 25.34. So it was $2 higher, almost $3 higher.
Okay, so you're looking at 10%, just about, give or take,
even
right?
Even more. So 22.44 versus 25.34, it's $2.90. That's, you know, 12-13%. And gold on January 18th was in yuan, and I don't know how to convert this, but the New York close in yuan was 5,238 yuan per kilogram of gold. And in Shanghai, it was 5,902 yuan. So it was 700 yuan more per kilogram. That works out to roughly about 70, 80 bucks an ounce more. This is called arbitrage. They're slowly turning up the heat where the big investors, like the commercial banks, the big traders, can access the LBMA and the COMEX, buy it, and then deliver it to Shanghai to make that arbitrage. And guess what? It ain't ever coming back. And this is how they will and have increased, will continue to increase their stockpile, first by draining the Western exchanges and now by slowly turning up the heat to incentivize arbitrage. And at some point, the COMEX and the LBMA, by the way, do you know that the LBMA is owned by the Chinese? They bought it a few years ago, and they just, this month said we're going to start registering warehouses in China to hold metal held on the LBMA. So the LBMA is owned by the Chinese, and now they're going to stockpile the metal held at the LBMA in China. I wonder, could that be coincidental? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. But there will come a point when the COMEX will be rendered complete and total crap. And they will realize that a market where, like on silver, you mentioned, it is 1,700% rehypothecated, meaning there are 1,700% more contracts, or for every one contract of 1,000 ounce bars, that's a COMEX contract. For every person who holds one of those contracts of 5,000 bars, there are 16 who hold the same contract, but it's backed by nothing. So if all 17 people stand for delivery, one would get the silver, 16 would get the shaft, and the COMEX is then rendered for what it is, a fractional reserve scam. So these countries aren't bitching about it. Why? Because they're the ones accumulating it all. In fact, they're using the ninjutsu move against us, using our own leverage to drain our exchanges by playing the same game. You can't beat them, join them. But how do they beat us? Slowly and methodically. I know. Let's buy the Shanghai. Let's buy the LBMA. Let's not let the world really know that we own it. And then we'll start warehousing the LBMA metals in China. And do you see where this is all going?
Yeah.
I mean, and this is why I like the term logarithmic decay all the way around us, whether you're talking socially, economically, morally, politically, anything, the erosion of all of these things or the progression of all these things, little by little by little by little by little, bang, all at once. So, yes, silver is much higher priced right now in Shanghai, and it will only go higher. The real price will eventually show itself in Shanghai long before it does in COMEX. And when that happens, the COMEX market will blow up. It will no longer be accepted as the epicenter of price discovery in the world. And, you know, these are the things that I love to talk about. And I love the questions that you ask. I can't wait to come back on your show again, because you ask real questions that your listeners need to know. Everything I am saying to you is rooted in fact, with the only thing that isn't is what does it all mean? And I think you take these pieces that are laid at your feet and you try to combine them into the most logical outcome. And that's why I believe that we will lose the petro status. We will end up regretting all of these things that we have done in terms of weaponizing the dollar and going green and all of these horrible things that we've let happen inside our country, because this is what is incentivizing the rest of the world to join a group that represents the majority of every human being on this earth. Almost 8 out of every 10 people are in these groups across the planet. And I think it's very naive of us to believe that this won't have a poor outcome, where you can continue to create copious amounts of debt without any recourse. And, you know, we're a country that just continues to spend money like it grows on trees. And I think this, between this and the constant warring and bombing and all the things that we're doing that the world has grown tired of, is the rallying cry. The glue that will make it all stick will be pegging a common currency to a commodity like gold, which is what? The only other tier one asset, which has been accumulated by who? Oh yeah, all the BRICS countries, China, 14 straight months in a row. And I don't think we've even begun to see the outcome yet, but with 200 meetings between now and the end of October, all in Russia for the BRICS, culminating with the big one where they're going to announce not only is there a new settlement currency, what are the countries that have been admitted? Remember, 35 have already formally applied on top of the 10. It's going to be crazy, brother. And I'll be happy to ride shotgun with you and come back on your show as often as you'll have me to talk about what's happening day by day.
Let's do it, man. Andy Shechtman, Miles Franklin, I really appreciate it. You're already, believe it or you're way too kind to say this, so I'll say you're already a large brand and I have a large following, and I'm one of those people. But shout out your contact info real quick and also link to you in the notes. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, we have a website, milesfranklin.com. Any questions for me or my staff, or to receive a better price list that we hold close to the vest and don't publish publicly, much better. It's info@milesfranklin.com. You can ask any questions about what you've heard here. You can ask to talk to me. You can send me an email, or you can ask just for our more competitive price list, info@milesfranklin.com. And we are more than happy to send that out to you and answer any questions.
Excellent. Andy, again, it was an absolute pleasure. I'd love to have you on again soon.
I'd love that very much as well. Appreciate it and look forward to picking up where we left off.
Thank you.